everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am Paul David, one of your co-hosts.
And I'm your other co-host, Maya Dharampal-Hornby.
Today, we are joined by Odon, who's the co-founder and COO of PiggyVest, the largest digital investment platform in Nigeria. Welcome to the pod, Odon.
Hi.
And today we're talking about building Nigeria's biggest online savings and investment platform. So no small feat. Very well done, Odon. By way of background, what Odon's done is combine discipline and flexibility, you know, to come to this radical solution that's helped over 5 million people grow their savings. The platform does this through three main mechanisms. One is a goal-oriented savings mechanism, which helps users save towards their targeted goals, either by themselves or with a group. And then two, you've got these flex Naira and dollar option that allows users to manage their money at any time, for example, transferring it, organizing it, withdrawing funds. And then three, you've got house money, which is a semi-strict wallet helping users save for house rent and bills while earning up to 11% interest per annum. I really need that because I struggle to save. And I was just talking to my partner the other day. She's like, maybe you can just lock it away somewhere and where you can't touch it. And so it sounds like you've solved for that. So thanks, Oda.
You're welcome.
Odon's mission to help PiggyVest users have financial freedom is also connected to her pursuit of gender equity, a cause close to her heart. In 2020, she co-founded the Feminist Coalition, a group of Nigerian feminists who propelled the End SARS movement. And in January 2021, she co-founded First Check Africa, a female-led angel fund that invests in women African tech at an early stage to make it easier for them to raise venture-backed capital and invest in tech startups. Welcome to the pod, Odon. You've most recently founded the Carousel Network. Would you be able to briefly explain to our listeners what this is and what inspired you to venture into the world of podcasts?
Right. So before or while we started PM Push TV, I actually worked as a tech journalist. I have dabbled in media off and on, and I've always loved it. I wrote for a while for Zikoko, which is the BuzzFeed of Nigeria. I was like the founding writer there. And so media has always been super close to my heart, and it's just kind of obvious that there's a draw that people now have to audio as a form of like media propagation. And I, my friend who's co-host of the largest podcast in Nigeria, I Said What I Said, has been trying and been working on, you know, starting a podcast network for the longest time. And she spoke to me about it and I thought, why not? And we've done that for a year now. Carousel is a podcast network that's targeted at amplifying female voice. So her voice, co-host voice, and our podcast and development are also helmed by women. And what we've seen in the past 1 year is that there is a market for lifestyle podcasts, for sports podcasts, for finance podcasts, led by women, championing women's experiences and just trying to find our place in the media landscape.
Moving on to PiggyVest, you've recently released the PiggyVest Savings Report 2024 after spending the summer surveying over 10,000 Nigerians about their financial management. How different were the results of this report from the one that PiggyVest conducted in 2023? And what do you hope policymakers, banks, and individuals in Nigeria learn from it?
So I suppose what's most striking for me is people's reason for putting money aside, right? Last year, a lot of people, most people were saving to relocate abroad, right? And they were doing it because, like, you know, the economy is getting worse, it's getting more challenging, and all of those other valid reasons. But this year, most people are saving for, like, for financial freedom. They're saving so they're not so stressed. They're saving so they're not under pressure. And so I think it's very interesting, like, the disparity, because last year people were stressed so they wanted to leave. But this year, it's sounding like people can't even afford to leave. They're in disposable income is so much less. They're not thriving, they're more surviving, and everyone's just looking towards the bottom line. How can I improve my bottom line? So that's definitely been very shocking to see, kind of like the regression in how we look at our finances, how we look at our money. So I really hope, and the report's certainly been everywhere, that policymakers are actually reading this and understanding that things are really tough, right? We require some kind of fight, right? If our currency has gotten so bad, December last year, we were at 750 naira to a dollar. Today, it's 2,000 naira to a dollar. So that means that people have sat and just continued working and living their lives and have lost almost over 100% in value. And that means that they've lost over 100% in buying power, 100% in savings power. Most people cannot afford to do the things that we've actually lost some people from middle class to lower. That's how really. So I think the report really certainly highlights challenges that we're facing as a nation. And I hope that we have more policy that's driven at improving this, the bottom line, right? Because private companies can only do so much, right? Some problems are social problems and require social intervention. And I think this is one of such things. And I think that's what the report helps us represent properly. There are problems that are beyond what the individual or a private organization can fix for themselves and require government actually direct some energy and resource and time towards righting the direction of the economy.
One thing I love learning about you in the research for this episode was about the impact that your mom had on shaping your financial attitude. That's something I can relate to a lot. Both my parents were small business owners, so we like worked in the family store and got to see them like move money around. And my dad was in real estate, so you know, I learned a lot from that. So now you've got over 5 million users on PiggyVest. What would you say are the three pieces of advice that you would give your users? Let's just say you're now the mom of the 5 million users on PiggyVest. So what would your mom like advice be?
Honestly, the first thing would be you can start anywhere. There's always this fear. People are like, oh, I don't have enough to save. But that's really why we started PiggyVest, right? In 2016, when we started the company, there were 22 banks in Nigeria and there were so many asset management companies. But the minimum that the average person could invest in treasury bills in Nigeria at the time was ₦1 million. ₦1 million is a large sum of money in Nigeria. And the average income for an entry-level person, like I was at the time, was about ₦150,000. So a lot of the financial infrastructure of telling young people, come back later, or you have to save for a year before you can begin to invest, before you can begin to plan. And so when we started PiggyVest, the idea was you can save as little as ₦100 every day. Today, ₦100 is maybe 5 cents. Us being able to go that granular into however much you have, start putting it aside. Like, it's very cliche saying, drop of water, make a mighty ocean, right? So I believe in people starting small. And then I believe in planning. Finances, financial freedom, everything is a journey. And for us in Nigeria, is a more difficult journey than for most. But it's why planning is just so incredibly important. And we have to underscore it. We don't have a credit system. So that means that every payment that you make is in cash, in bulk, and you do it upfront. And that means that more than anything, you have to plan. You have to save. So it's building on like the previous point. You start small and then have a plan. And then the third thing is to understand that you have to be kind to yourself, right? It's between December last year and right now today, our currency has gone from exchanging at 750 naira to a dollar to almost 2,000 naira to a dollar. And for the average Nigerian, you've just gotten poorer by doing nothing. You know, you haven't done anything wrong. You've continued to move forward. You've continued to go to work. You've continued to save. You've continued to invest, but still you end up here. So I think it's important for our users, everyone really, to be very kind to themselves, especially as they consider their financial plans and their financial future. Sometimes things are way, way far beyond your control. And sometimes, like, there isn't anything you can do to make sure that this is better. So I think more grace while you like plan out your financial future.
And just as a follow-up, you know, one thing, we love a good, you know, social media brand presence. So one thing that PiggyVest is known for is its ironic Gen Z focused social media presence. So for instance, you know, you recently posted on Instagram a carousel on unconventional ways to save money, promoting laziness because no outside, no spending. Love that. You promoted having rich friends and also intermittent fasting, which I think is hilarious. So we'll love to hear a bit more about how you tailor your messages for, you know, your different platforms and different audiences, especially now as you've grown from serving, you know, just young people to other demographics that need to do more with their money other than just saving.
So what we try to do is the majority of our users, 70% of our users are under the age of 35. So social media is really for them. And for us, our social media voice is, we modeled it after like a friendly conversation. So it's like you're 23 years old, you have a 25-year-old friend who just has a bit more knowledge of finance, and that's the voice we want to project on social media. And it's been the one that we've handed down through social media managers, through marketing managers. This is how we want to be heard. And that is in contrast to most financial social media, most social media accounts in Africa, where it's people talking usually down their users are talking at them, and we prefer to have a conversation with you. We prefer that you feel comfortable, and so that's the voice that we want. But as we've grown and attracted like older people, more serious people, we've had to balance it out, and the result of that is savings reports and similar projects, where while we can be fun, but we have roundtables all the time, and we do a lot of leadership programs as well. So we have a customer success roundtable, we have a cybersecurity roundtable that's attended by regulators and fellow founders, the government. We have the savings report that's carried by both traditional and online media, analyzed orally on TV. And so we've, over the past 8 years, finally kind of slowly adopted elements of traditional and more mature media, even as we try to keep our social media authentic to that initial voice.
I think that's really smart from a growth strategy perspective. You know, there's a lot of like anxiety and worry around finances and money. So like the fact that you're tapping into that and using that to kind of, you know, lead or drive your growth strategy and your social media marketing, I think is brilliant. So very well done from another agency there.
And also, it strikes me that your social media presence isn't just, you know, something to help you guys grow, to help you attract, maintain new users, but it's also to promote financial literacy. How big do you see that in your mission at PiggyVest?
Honestly, that's pretty central and very core to the work that we're doing. Our mission is literally to give everyone the power to better manage their finances. So for us, information is really power. Like knowledge is power. And ultimately, the ability to be able to do all those things becomes that power. So our social media is a bit of humor that carries the messaging that we always want to carry. Like, for instance, when we say, like, don't go outside, in Nigeria, we have a very vibrant nightlife culture. But vibrant is extremely expensive. So the average nightlife can cost you a month's salary, just one Friday. And so for people, and people do it, they go out. And right now, and as it always has been for young people, it's important that you're kind of conscious when you're doing it. So when we say no outside, we make jokes regularly that stepping out your door in Lagos means you've like spent like half of your bank account. So it's really kind of going to the heart of the average young person's experience. This is things that they're familiar with, driving home like that message for them. Like, we also have a saying called there's rice at home. Another big thing that we do in Nigeria is we love to go to restaurants. We love to eat out. And Nigerian food is Nigerian food everywhere. So there's rice at home is basically us telling you, you can eat at home sometimes. And so we laugh. You know, we post memes, we post GIFs, we do TikToks, but the message remains really clear. And it's one that you can reinforce repeatedly without seeming too authoritative.
Completely. I was listening to an interview with the founder of Duolingo, the language learning app, and they employ quite a similar social media strategy. Yeah, just they're known for sort of their ironic voicing, yeah, and the owl. But he was describing the sort of steps of content moderation that goes through all the posts and what that looks like, and him having basically the final say on everything that goes out on their Instagram and TikTok, which I thought was so funny and not what I expected the founder of Duolingo to be spending his time doing. Is that similar?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So there is a talk that the founder of Airbnb, Dave, I forget the year, where he also alluded to something similar. Whatever he doesn't have the bandwidth to oversee or give input to, Airbnb doesn't do. And you know, there is several sides to that conversation where people are like, oh, this is micromanaging. I think that when a lot of your business is perception and reputation based, I don't think you can afford to not do that. So there is, to an extent, there is individuality on the team and there is ownership of your role. But PiggyVest is so, the idea for the company was literally gotten from social media. So we're very heavily like in tune and aware of what's been said by the public. And it's been 8 years of living and like curating that perception. So for me and my co-founders, it's so important that nothing actually goes out without some one of us having like run through it and being okay with it. Sometimes three of us. So actually our social media was for the first 18 months run personally by me, just so we could curate that voice and make sure that we had it down to a science and then we can hand it over to someone else. So I'm not a CMO. My co-founder, Josh, who's our CMO, is now in charge of the large marketing team. And he actually has to cross-check, make sure, push notifications. Okay, this is the voice we want to employ. Sometimes they'll put you on a group chat with everyone and we're all workshopping it. Oh, maybe we don't want to say this. But I think it's really important because it's 5 million people. you have to kind of strike some semblance of balance. And the only way to do that is to get as much perspective into what you're sending out as possible. And so, yeah, pretty very hands-on communications approach within our team as well.
And I'd just like to ask a bit more about the idea of Piggyvest coming from social media itself. I like how that sort of rehabilitates doom scrolling a little bit, that the biggest investment platform in Nigeria might have just been from you scrolling through Twitter.
Literally, yes, actually. December 31st of 2015, myself and my co-founder were just all sitting on the couch and something started happening on Twitter where there was a lady. So we used to be called piggybank.ng, and that was just literally because the idea, we got it from someone, a lady who broke her piggy bank on December 31st, and inside of it, she had saved 1,000 naira every day for that year. And she took photos, posted it on Twitter, and it sparked conversation. And so everyone on Twitter was like, oh, I'll get a wooden box too. And Josh is like, well, is there a way to kind of build a digital version of this? And that's literally how the idea of piggybank.ng at the time was born. There was, you know, from, there's a live conversation actually of him and I going back and forth on Twitter that then gave rise to the MVP of it that we built over 2 weeks and then launched.
I was curious about your thoughts on the African fintech landscape. Obviously, we've seen a lot of incredible fintech companies come out of the continent. Flutterwave, Opay, and Pesa. Shout out to ChipperCash, they're a former client. Interswitch, Jumo. So we'd be curious, like, your journey as a founder, like what you've learned from those other, you know, wildly successful African fintech companies, and also what you sort of see for the future of fintech on the continent.
Right, I think that our ecosystem is still so young, and for how young it is, I'm very, very in awe of how much we've been able to do and how many like successful companies have come out of Africa. I have a bias towards Nigeria, so I'll probably speak more about that. But Flutterwave, Paystack, these are all startups that we've worked with, read about, and continue to be inspired by. And I think that I appreciate the work that's been done on the African continent from a fintech perspective specifically because I'm in it and I'm very aware of how challenging it is to be able to build from Lagos for Africa and eventually for the world. Like Flutterwave is an international company that will list somewhere soon. And it's very humbling to know that like we all started from the same background. We all have the same challenges. And every day everyone is like, oh, your challenges in Nigeria are the real opportunities. And that's true, but they are actual real challenges. It's like when you run a business in Africa, it's like running your own tiny little country because you're providing your own power, your own security. Sometimes you're providing your own exchange. And so I think that like our ecosystem still has so much to do and so much to build, kind of like the one in Asia and in India. But the work that we've done already sets the right foundation for what's to come. And I think I also am very, well, not happy. I'm all right with the fact that the market is experiencing kind of a reset. You know, for 2021, 2022, we had so much money coming into the African tech ecosystem that it was like really hard to see, okay, so how much work is really being done. Now there is a bit more clarity on the actual work that's been done and the actual growth that we've achieved, and we're able to see where we're strong and where we need to improve. And so I think 2025, 2026 should be interesting as we kind of see that uptick again.
And so important in sort of such a germinating sector then to empower all types of people to be able to sort of make their mark. So as mentioned in the introduction, you dedicate a lot of your time and resources to empower women. What has progress looked like since you founded the Feminist Coalition? And then a bit of a broader question, what are your hopes for the gender equity movement in Nigeria over the next 10 years?
Well, I wish I had better news. I think that from a knowledge spreading perspective, we have made a lot of progress. 5 years ago, there weren't as many young women willing to call themselves feminist. Today, we have people who are proudly like carrying on the fight and continuing to make the noise. My challenge and a source of, I guess, sadness would be that the world seems to be more resistant than ever to the idea of empowering women or women stepping into their power. And, you know, every time there is a downturn in venture capital or a downturn in any sector, women always get affected first. You know, before the market went bearish, we had 2.5% of venture capital. Today, we have even less than that. And we are building and we're successful. You know, in Nigeria, there are so many female founders now, more than in 2013 when I first got into tech. In the UK, there is incredible women here who I think are so inspiring, and Boden of Starling Bank specifically. And yet, it's still so tough for women to close those early rounds of funding to make sure that we can find women down the funnel. So the work, you know, it remains the work. We continue to do it, but progress is very hard won, very hard fought, and very, very slow. I am happy and very optimistic, though, about the rate at which the message is getting to women. And so that means that we are less docile than we were in 2013, certainly much less docile than we were in 2016. In 2024, we have more women building, more women starting, more women speaking up, more women fighting. So, I mean, it can only be upwards from there. I wish we had, you know, more leaps and bounds progress type of stuff to report, but it's still so slow, from whether it's from tech or from social justice, it's all just the same.
Why do you think there has been so much progress in the sort of knowledge sharing piece over the last decade?
Well, I mean, representation, thinking matters, representation matters. And also, I think more people, more women are just getting smart to the fact that, like, look, if you don't stand up for yourself, no one will. And we're also realizing that a lot of these systems are just unfair, right? Sexism is not just people saying words at you, though that's probably the least of your problems. It's entrenched systemically, and we have to break down those systems. And I think as more people enter the workforce, more people try to start businesses, more people try to start families, you realize just how much is stacked against you. And, you know, better late than never, many people are lending their voices to making space for women in tech, in finance, in the world. And I think that, and also we just had like the American elections, which is just so historic to see how the conversation started, how it went, how it ended, unfortunately. But, you know, it remains that we had Hillary Clinton in 2016, we had Kamala. It's hard, but you open that door ever so wider, and that means that the next time someone else tries, maybe we succeed, maybe we don't. But again, the door will be open wide.
Okay, to just close off the discussion now, I'd love to ask you a few quick fire questions. So first up, if you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
It would be an education startup. Both my parents were university professors, and I was supposed to become a university professor as well, but then I took this detour. But I'm very interested in early childhood education, as my mom was. And if I were to found another startup after all of it, it would probably be something targeting that, how we shape the early education of kids. I thought my parents did a very interesting job with us. Maybe it can scale, maybe it can. It'd be nice to find out.
Nice. Yeah, you're talking to a former educator, so I love that answer. We love ed tech. I think there's, like, especially with AR and VR and all the things that are coming out, AI, there's so much opportunity, I think, for, like, really immersive, personalized ed tech. Yeah. So it's an exciting space, which leads me to my next question, another lightning round question. What tech invention excites you the most?
This is very cliche, but I really like the idea of applying AI to the problems that we face in Africa. So I guess AI, just not like this broad, it will take over the world perspective, right? We have many base fundamental challenges in Nigeria and on the continent, and I think that AI could be useful in solving, from finance to health, if shaped properly. It's kind of like how I think about crypto. I think that it forms a very nice infrastructural layer to solving some of the problems that we are yet to solve in Nigeria and Africa, especially around finance and health and transportation.
And what tech invention or use case of a tech invention makes you the most concerned right now?
Also AI. so yeah, I see like how it can make life better, but I also see how it can be used to make life so much worse. I'm very, very worried about that. The ethical implications of just putting so much of our information into a system that, if you believe what like scientists are saying, could end up becoming sentient. I'm actually terrified.
And maybe sort of the flip side of that, you know, who is a literal human, small L, small H, who has been an integral to your career journey in tech as a founder?
You know, Anne Boden of Starling Bank. I absolutely love her. I love the story of how she went about building Starling. I love how she kind of took a very brick by brick, step by step approach to building. And when they like announced their first profitable year, I was so happy because it just meant that, look, you can do it from whatever like position you choose to take. And Shelly, her story is interesting because she'd worked at Monzo and done all these other things. So she, from a career perspective, from a life perspective, though, I feel like I have to mention him, Lewis Hamilton. I'm a very huge fan. So I just go on media around calling his name. I think he's one of the most incredible sports people to ever exist. And that's not because of anything else other than how he chooses to approach the influence that he has on the sport. Making sure that he's advocating for people of color is the same way I hope that I can use whatever influence I get from being in tech to continue to advocate for women and our participation and our in tech and then generally.
I was wondering from seeing your Twitter feed if F1 was going to get mentioned in this.
I'm glad I had the chance.
Anyway, to shoehorn it in, probably couldn't have got it into the feminist question, but there we go. And finally, what's an inspirational quote that stuck with you throughout your journey in tech or entrepreneurship?
This is great. This is a quote from my dad. He got it from somewhere, but I forget where. He says, aim very high, work very hard, and care very deeply. And so that has shaped my journey, what I believe in, and is actually what I leave most people with when they ask me how they should do it, because I believe that if you have your intentions in the right place, your goals all set, and you just kind of work towards it, I don't think you can go wrong.
That's a great quote. We'll make sure to make a cool little social creative out of that and share that around. It'd be Odin's dad, so you can give us his name as well. So.
We're
so grateful for you taking the time. I mean, the work that you've done with Piggy Vest and engaging over 5 million people to kind of grow their savings, is really incredible. And the fact that you take your time to share your journey with us, we're so grateful for that. So we'll have to grab that coffee in London at some point and download a bit more of your brain about all the great stuff that you've done and what you've got coming with this new ed tech venture that you've just announced as your next venture. So, maybe we can get Lewis Hamilton to invest in it. We'll see. So there you go. Board of directors. There you go. So thank you so much, Odin, for coming on to the pod today. We're so grateful. And thank you to all our listeners. This has been another great episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, talking with Odin, the co-founder and CEO at Piggy Vest, about building Nigeria's biggest online savings and investment platform. And as always, please give a review, give a 5-star rating. Helps us get great guests like Odin onto the podcast. So thank you, Odin, and thank you to all our listeners. Bye, everybody.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks so much.